talking a lot about microbes and bacteria because we really want to take the focus off of killing bacteria and cultivating them, and because that's really important before we're born and after we're born. And there are doctors who have been looking at this lately, like Dr. Ady, and he knew that the right bacteria at the right time are vital for a baby's immune system, and that non-inflammation is part and parcel with having those bacteria and keeping that baby's immune system calmed down. And he asked the question, what happens to the immune system when the colonization of the bowel and neonates is delayed? Can it still mature properly? And so he did these studies with mice. And he had three different groups of mice. One of them is germ-free. There are these mice that don't have bacteria in their bowels, and they tend not to develop proper immunity. And then he had a second group, which were called conventional mice, and those are just regular old mice with regular old bacteria. And then there was a third group, and this was really the test group, because they started out germ-free, and then after a period of time, he gave that germ-free group conventional fecal transplantation from the conventional mouse. And he waited to see what would happen to the immune development and the immune system. And what he found was that despite the achieved homeostasis in the bowel and the proper microbes, that the immune development was substantially different in the mice that were given the transplants and didn't have those microbes from the very beginning. So the next question we would have to ask ourselves is, what month or what year does this window close? And we don't know. And so my advice to you is the earlier the better. So we should always be paying attention to what our microbiomes are like before people become pregnant and during pregnancy and even during infancy and childhood, that most of the time, I've just spoken to two people standing here whose children were prescribed antibiotics and the parents didn't give them and the children got better anyway because they were doing vitamin C, vitamin D, probiotics, breast milk. And those are things that actually enrich the actual system, give the proper bacteria, and get the immune system doing what it's supposed to do, which is much more effective than throwing grenades into the microbiome. So this is just a little review of what we covered today, because I know some people weren't here in the morning, and it's just good to review anyway, that infant microbiomes can be altered during several windows. And how can this happen? Well, from the very beginning, we started talking about the lady who had dysbiosis, or abnormal commensal bacteria, and imbalances between the candida and the bacteria even before she became pregnant. So it can start with the mother. It always starts with the mother. Her health has to be established first in order to expect a healthy baby. Then there are antibiotics that can be given to the mother while she's pregnant or even before she's pregnant. There are vaccines that can be given to the mother that can alter her inflammatory status, which now, as we know, can change the types of bacteria in the bowel and cause dysbiosis. And then we have delivery mode, which is what Hillary covered, that the delivery mode, irrespective of the amount of antibiotics that are given, just by virtue of the catecholamines and the hormones that are produced during the delivery, we can expect a different array of microbiota in the milk and in the rest of the body. Then after birth, we have to consider milk versus formula. And there are studies since the early 1900s showing that formula-fed babies have a completely different bowel microbiome, that they have overgrowth in the small intestine, and that back in the days when they were studying SIDS, they found that they had a really hard time finding dead babies that were breastfed, that most of the SIDS babies they found were bottle-fed. And so formula makes a big difference, and one bottle of formula can change that baby's microbiome for 2 weeks. So you want to be really thoughtful about formula. If you're giving formula, Archie Calacarinos used to recommend giving a pinch of vitamin C in the bottle when he had the Aboriginal people taking formula. And we can also consider supplementing with probiotics if formula has to be given. And I saw somebody look at me in the audience who told me she's having to top off with formula. So I know it sometimes, for whatever reason, it can be necessary, but it doesn't mean that you're stuck with it. There are things you can do to still fortify that infant's immune system and that microbiome. Then we have the mother's maternal dysbiosis again, which is important, as Hillary talked about. If those bowel microbes are not established properly, then what she's grabbing from her colon and bringing into her lymphatics and her blood into the breast isn't going to be the same. And then antibiotics to the baby and to the mother. These are all the ways that we can alter the microbiome adversely. And then vaccines to the baby, which we saw happening in our case presentation. And this happens through various different mechanisms, by direct killing of bacteria and through inflammatory mechanisms. You've seen that gut flora is important now. I think we've driven that point home. You've seen that colostrum supplies huge numbers of commensal bacteria. You've seen that mature milk supplies huge numbers of commensal bacteria. And you've seen that all of the above orchestrate parts of the development of the neonatal immune system. So what's missing from this picture? What is the elephant in the room right now? You guessed it, vaccines. Well, this is how scientists and doctors think about the newborn immune system. And this is what they tell you will happen after you give your baby vaccines, that you'll have a souped up Bugatti ready to go and deal with anything. Well, it turns out that's not true, but it also turns out that that's not true. That's actually what the newborn immune system really is. It's an eight-wheeled sports car with clamps on all the wheels, meaning that it's been through the factory, it's got all the parts it needs, and it's being held back purposefully. While it's being controlled with breast milk, it's being corrected, it's being educated and protected with all those chemicals like lactoferrin in breast milk that actually calms inflammation while killing bacteria, that makes E. coli not be able to even bind to the intestinal wall. There are so many contents in breast milk besides Hamlet and besides those T and B cells that are actually acting to protect that baby. And in addition to that, it keeps the immune system in balance and keeps pulling it back every time something pulls it out. So breast milk redirects the immune system when something goes in the wrong direction. Those clamps can unclamp under special circumstances. The infant immune system is meant to be anti-inflammatory. It's not a mistake that infants are more vulnerable to infections if they are not breastfed. It's part of the design. The infant immune system is fully functional, but it's clamped. And Dr. Lahey wrote a really salient paper in 2013, which explained this. And what he did is he took immune cells from an adult and put them in a neonate, and he found that they didn't work anymore, and that neonate became susceptible to infection with Listeria. And then he took immune cells from a neonate and put them into an adult, and they worked fine, and they were able to fight off the Listeria bacteria. And he concluded from that the infant immune system is suppressed in order to allow for the building of good gut flora. Imagine colonizing your intestines with gut flora and letting the immune system attack bacteria. It just wouldn't work. So this is all programmed into the epigenome and the genes and the program of breast milk to allow the baby to learn what's safe and what to react to. And during this period, this is an educational period, and the baby's not let loose. 60% of those clamps are gone within 6 months, and then they're all taken off within 2 years. And that's really interesting, given that, you know, that's generally the time when animals start to wean. If we compare animal, say, dog years to human years, or pig years to human years, or even mouse years, or mouse months, I guess I should say, that it's usually in that two-year period that they naturally wean, and that it's after that two-year period that their immune systems are capable to function independently. So the other thing is that the baby can take off those clamps if it needs to, under special circumstances. Those clamps can all come off, TH1 can function, TH2 can function, but it's at a cost. And Dr. Zaghwani wrote about that and stated it, and I'm going to review that in just a minute. So it's true that babies don't mount fevers at first, and we know that fevers are protective. They're not things we should be worried about. We should be wondering what's causing it, and we should be supporting the immune system when babies have fevers, not clamping it down with anti-fever medications and anti-inflammatories. Babies don't mount strong inflammatory responses. purposefully, and they're held in that position by the mother's milk. And that's why breast milk protection is vital. So, you know, when people are concerned about the vulnerability of babies, and I heard somebody today talking about, you know, the parents of a friend were concerned because the baby was 2 weeks overdue for its vaccines. And it's just really ludicrous to when you consider the protection that a vaccine can give against the protection that human milk from a healthy mother can give. It's like night and day, and one of them is actually a nutrient, and the other has no nutritive values whatsoever. So a baby's immune system isn't defective, it isn't immature, any of those adjectives that are used in the old scientific literature. The baby's immune system is learning from you, and it's appropriately developmentally programmed. A baby develops adaptive tolerance by suppressing inflammatory cytokines like those TNF-alphas and IL-6 that I talked about earlier to make sure that T cells don't respond to what's safe and what is self. Some of you might be thinking, yes, but that period leaves the baby vulnerable to infections, so they have to get vaccinated. Well, first off, I just showed you that mortality for infant disease dropped before vaccines and dropped with no vaccines at all. This was all before antibiotics were invented. Second, vaccination of children has led to those children growing up and becoming mothers who don't have the immunity they used to have in the old days to be able to pass that immunity on to the newborn through the placenta and through the milk. We know this is a problem with measles. It's also well established in medical literature that breastfeeding mothers who were vaccinated when they were children aren't able to pass off the same level of immunity to their babies. So you might be thinking, what about the invasive bacterial diseases? But there's also an answer to that. And medical articles, again, show that breastfed babies don't usually contract invasive bacterial diseases because of all those immunologic components in breast milk, because of T cells, B cells, and Hamlet. Furthermore, every part of a vaccine is presented to the baby, bypassing all the normal parts, portals of entry, and have to be dealt with urgently by the immune system in an abnormal manner, diverting that immune system from what it really ought to be doing and stimulating it when it should be in an anti-inflammatory position. This study was done in 1967, and it's really important because it's unlikely to be done again anytime in the near future, but this doctor looked at 200 children over the age of 5 years old. And these children were vaccinated with all different kinds of vaccines, the live viral, the killed viral, bacterial subunit vaccines. And he looked to see various different physiologic parameters after they were vaccinated. And these are some of the things that he showed, is that these children had significant degrees of adrenal stress. Their catecholamines were elevated. The acid buildup was so intense that their alkaline stores dropped for quite a long time, he said. And their inflammatory markers rose. Back then, they were using erythrocyte sedimentation rates. And today, we also know that C-reactive protein rates are quite high after children are vaccinated. They showed that there was clotting factors and bleeding factors that were off, and that the lipid levels first dropped and then they rose again. And that can also be an acute inflammatory reaction. And that heart function had changed. There were arrhythmias that were documented in these young people. So even back in 1967, doctors were documenting the physiologic stressors that happened after vaccination. And so it's really hard to put that together with Dr. Offit's theory that babies can tolerate 100,000 vaccines at one time. He's gone back and forth between those two numbers. Equally realistic. So this is another study I just want to bring to your attention by Ladenpera in 2008. And what this scientist did is he looked at five different human infants, and all of these infants were vaccinated with DTP, polio, Haemophilus influenza B on schedule at 3 months and 5 months. And he took some blood out of these infants, and they were re-stimulated with pertussis toxin. And he looked to see what would happen in the blood with these new genetic techniques that they have. And this is what he found, that 33 allergy-related genes were activated. So this is all epigenetic stuff going on here, okay? 66 asthma-related genes were activated. 67 cancer genes were upregulated. And 25 immunological disease genes were upregulated. So this is a pretty startling discovery. Again, doesn't really sit well with the theory of 100,000 vaccines being tolerated. I'm just going to now give you another mini crash course on immunology, because in a minute you'll see why. Okay, we have innate immunity and we have adaptive immunity. The innate immunity is the reason that each time either any of you have gotten sick, you haven't died from it. But I should say that each time any of you has become infected by something that your body has never met before, you didn't die from it, because your innate immune system, meaning these cells here, macrophages, dendritic cells, neutrophils, natural killer cells, those cells are always there. These are the gatekeepers, and they're ready to go to battle when need be. And they can take care of viruses and bacteria. But what happens after they're activated is that they tell the adaptive immune, they call in the adaptive immunity. So up here, we have the innate immunity happening. And this is just a schematic, okay? This is a blood vessel, and this is the tissue, and this is kind of what's going on. You have your frontline soldiers, the innate immunity, ready to deal with invasion. And then after they deal with the invasion, they send signals to the adaptive immunity. I showed you that earlier with the aluminum, when those cells ate the aluminum and then brought that aluminum and all those inflammatory signals to the other cells. Well, those other cells were this adaptive immune response. So these cells here will proliferate, and now that's what will become Th1, Th2, Th17, B cells. And this is your adaptive immunity, and this is the one that can say, okay, we've seen this before, we remember it, and we'll be able to respond to it later. And when natural infection occurs, this happens usually quite successfully, depending on what the microbe is. Not all microbes. Tetanus, you won't get this. If you get tetanus disease, you can still get tetanus disease again. But if you have pertussis, whooping cough, then this is all activated beautifully, and your body remembers it for some 30 years. If you have measles, your body remember it for 75 years. So that's just basically how innate and adaptive immunity work. Okay, here we have our antigen-presenting cell out here again, the dendritic cell, and it comes again to the, I'm showing you the same thing over and over in different pictures. So this is a naive T cell, and I talked about Th1 and Th2 before, and this is a very simplified version of this slide I showed you before with Th17 and all those other T helper cells. But these two here are really important for what I'm about to talk about. And that is that certain interleukins call Th1 to come to act. And this Th1 is important when we get invaded with intracellular pathogens. And generally, when we experience viruses and bacteria, this is an appropriate immune response. This is what we want to happen. And down here, the Th2, these, you know, there's a purpose for all of these things. It's not like any of them are innately bad. Th2 protects you from extracellular pathogens, parasites, and this is also tends to be something that can cause allergies or be associated with allergies. So you'd never want it to skew too much to Th2. And these two systems are talking to each other all the time. So when Th1 becomes activated, Th2 can kind of calm it down, and vice versa. So it's not like nothing's functioning by itself here. Immunology is incredibly complicated. But that's basically the breakdown of Th1 and Th2. Now, what you would ideally want to happen after you're vaccinated is for Th1 to happen. And when babies are getting breast milk, they've shown in studies when they vaccinate babies, the babies that are breastfed respond with Th1, and the babies that are formula fed respond to Th2 and have more likelihood of having allergies. So breast milk continues to do this kind of an education as well. So this study by Dr. Zaghouani in 2010 showed a couple of things. One is that the babies can respond to pathogens when they need to, and that they can respond in Th1 and Th2 manner. We used to think that babies could only respond through Th2, but that's not true. What happens is those babies' immune cells are clamped down, and so it's not that they can't do it, it's that they shouldn't be doing it. So he did a really interesting study where he got these one-day-old mice, and he vaccinated them with a viral mimic. And then he watched what happened, and he saw that a little bit of this interleukin came out here, and Th1 occurred and Th2 occurred. So the old theory that infants can't respond using Th2 was shown here to be wrong. So they responded both, but this is what is important, is that an epigenetically mediated response happened in this Th1 cell. This is not the kind of receptor that usually happens in a Th1 cell. It's a specific kind of weird receptor. And everything looked okay at the time. And they let the mouse get a little bit older, and they vaccinated it again and gave him a second hit of antigen to see what would happen. And the Th2 cells came up normally, but they killed the Th1 cells because of those receptors that were on there. So the idea that babies only respond to Th2 came about because this was happening, not because they weren't making Th1 at all. And it's because babies shouldn't be, you know, exposed to injected antigens. And then he wanted to see what would happen if he did it over successive days, not all in the same mice, but he wanted to see what happened on day 2 and then day 3, because a mouse day is actually equal to weeks or months in us, okay? So he found something different happened on day 6. And what happened there is that he did the same thing. He just let the 1 to 5 day old mouse just be itself. And then on day 6, he vaccinated this mouse, and he found that it made lots of interleukin-12, and it made a normal Th1 cell, and it made regular Th2 cells, and that when he vaccinated again, it responded normally. So it didn't respond with this allergenic profile. It responded with the profile you would expect, say, if you stimulated an adult. So he uncovered something really interesting here and really important, and that is that in a 0 to 6 day old rodent, that there is a different kind of program that goes on that responds very differently to an injected antigen. And we don't know exactly what the human correlate is, but there are conversion factors for mouse years, mouse days into human years, and the estimate is 0 to 8 months. So meaning anywhere between 0 and 8 months on an immunologic basis, that baby isn't going to respond like it would later, and that it's probably going to be more likely to respond in this Th2 inflammatory IgE-mediated allergic profile. Well, so you might say, well, okay, those are mice, and who cares? What about humans? Well, there actually is a human study that backed this up. And this looked at 11,531 children who received at least 4 doses of diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus vaccine. And then they were assessed at age 7 to see who developed asthma. And what they wanted to look at here was the timing of the vaccines. And was there any difference in asthma development if the vaccines were given on time versus if the vaccines were given later? And they found that there was a significant difference if the vaccines were delayed. The first DPT dose, if it was given on time, there was a 13.8% asthma rate. But if it was delayed for more than 4 months after birth, that went down to more than half, to 5.9%. If the second DPT dose was delayed, we also saw a decline from 13.5 to 6.8. And this decline became less dramatic as the baby got older. And that's, again, consistent with Zaguni's study that I just showed you, because the earlier that they're stimulated, the more likely they are to get this inflammatory IgE response. The same thing happened with the third DPT dose, but not as dramatic, 13.3 down to 8.3. And they said that if all 3 of those doses were delayed, the likelihood of asthma was reduced by 60%. So, which leads me to wonder what would have happened if none of those doses were given. So, do you want your infant or your 2-year-old having sex and getting married? Do you want them reproducing? Do you want them going to university? Do you want them driving a car? No. So why are scientists so impatient when it comes to the infant immune system to get it to act like an adult immune system? Most conventional medical doctors don't understand why a normal pregnancy, a delivery with no interference, and human milk is the only foundation for real health. Why? Because doctors rarely see the healthy children because those healthy children aren't brought to their practice, right? And when they are, their shining health is often overlooked with the single focus on getting those vaccines up to date. I can't tell you how many parents I talk to who say, my children aren't vaccinated. They're so healthy. They've never needed doctors. They've never needed drugs. My son got a cut on the arm. I went into the emergency room, and all they could think about when the baby was bleeding was getting the tetanus vaccine in there. During my pediatric rotations, I thought the chronic illness in children was normal. I'm not the only doctor that's had this happen. I remember reading Dr. Archie Calacarino's talking about his experience in Australia. And he was working with the Aboriginal kids, and he just saw that they were sick all the time. They always had runny noses, and he just thought, you know, I guess these kids are just really inherently unhealthy. And then he talked to some of the elders who pulled him aside and said, this didn't happen until the white men came along. We started eating their food and taking their medicines. Well, I found this out after I realized something on a lesser scale was happening in my patients and in my life, which is that a life that is dependent on the medical system and drugs that start with anti will generally breed children that look like that. And a life that starts with a good foundation won't. My first look at this was actually being exposed to the Steiner school system and those children. And if anyone doesn't know, this is a system that has a philosophy of non-vaccinating, of eating lots of fermented food, nothing processed, getting good amounts of sleep, not stressing the children out psychologically in school. And these kids looked like alien species to me. I'd never heard of a child that hadn't been on an antibiotic. I was on antibiotics all the time as a kid. All my family, my friends, had no consciousness about any of this stuff. And as a result, we were just sick all the time. Well, these kids were teenagers. They hadn't been vaccinated. They had the childhood illnesses. They didn't have allergies. They didn't need antibiotics. They were ridiculously smart and creative and happy. So I figured something had to be going on here, and I should probably take a look at what's really going on with them. And from there on in, my education began. So there's a lesson to be learned here. There's now so much in the medical literature which details the meticulous depth and importance of the program of the baby by breast milk, that to ignore it all, as is currently done, not only heaps insult onto injury, but makes a mockery out of the oath that we doctors take. Our babies, children of the future, and adults deserve the very best of care. And I hope that a new generation of doctors will rise up who are far more interested in working with the programming of the blueprint rather than ignoring it and tossing hand grenades like vaccines, antibiotics, and other drugs in response to physiological abnormalities. And this is my dream, and I hope this is the dream of lots of doctors who may hear this talk in the future. Thank you. The end.